sisters and my brothers.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View here on BBSRadio.com for Monday, January 3rd, 2011. Boy, 2010 went fast. Tough year for me, folks. Tough year. Several surgeries, but I'm still hanging in there, and I'm still alive and well. Much to the regret of my adversaries, my intellectual, philosophical adversaries. I'm your host, PK, and I'll be with you for the next hour. And you can email me here at pkbbs2@gmail.com. I'd like to thank my friend Don Nikoloff for helping me to produce this show and for his advice. I think he's going for some coffee now, so we'll let him take care of that.
I'm still here, but I am.
You're still here? Okay.
I am going to get a cup of Java. So
I don't want it to get cold.
All right. Okay. It won't. All right.
All right. Thanks, Don.
Have a good show.
Okay. Have a good coffee. So for those of you who may know who I am or know about this show, I give the Third Stream view, the libertarian view, if you will. Actually, more of the Austrian libertarian view. Austrian meaning the Austrian school of economics, with the libertarian view, which is the ethics of liberty and individualism. In short, the goal in living a life for really all of mankind of liberty, property, and peace. And I take some tough positions. I don't back down. I welcome criticism or comments. But I won't be intimidated by the old terms racism, anti-Semitism, hate speech, conspiracy theory, and unpatriotic. I reject those terms and labels as a way to try to silence opposition and dissent, especially intellectual, objective intellectual debate and dissent. So my take on things is always it's an expose on power, regardless of who wields it and who yields it. I usually weave together history, economics, philosophy, political science, and that's usually mixed in with my good and bad humor, my tasteless humor, and my sharp wit, with the sarcasm that flows and the my endless criticism and lampooning of politicians and bureaucrats and other pompous figures. So you can count on me. I always speak truth to power. I can't be bought, and you know I don't belong to any special interest groups. I've been in the libertarian movement since 1980, and about 4 years ago I became a Ron Paul Republican so I could vote in the primary. So I choose to remain in the Republican Party as a Ron Paul Republican, a libertarian Republican, or a Republican libertarian, if you will. And some of my worst or my most poignant criticisms are for Republicans and conservatives. I mean, we know the Democrats are big spenders and, you know, so very socialistic. But so many of us are unclear about a lot of the same crap that the Republicans are up to or the GOP is up to. And that's where the Tea Party comes in. You know, what's the Republicans or conservatives excuse? It goes back to what Ayn Rand said in the late 60s when she said that the only difference between conservatives and liberals is that conservatives bring socialism at a slightly slower pace. And I see that happening. In fact, it would seem that most politicians and bureaucrats, they listen to us only as a courtesy and then they do whatever they want. That seems to be how things are done. Well, supposedly with the new Congress, that's all going to change on January 5th, 2 days from now, when the new Congress comes with the House of Representatives with its Republican majority. Wow. I sure hope they live up to what they've said they're going to do and their ideals and cut spending and cut taxes even further. But sorry to be pessimistic about this, but I, judging by their track record, and even in 1994, I'm not expecting too much of them. And when I first heard that there's a push to raise the debt ceiling, my immediate response, of course, was no way. that's just giving the heroin more addict. It's buying the another six pack and a bottle of whiskey for the alcoholic. You know, the way that where was I? Oh, raising the debt ceiling. I mean, my first reaction, of course, was no, no way. They just want to raise their ability to be more irresponsible, to cut taxes while they spend more at the same time. So I'll be going over some more spending cut ideas that I have. I've spoken about them before, and as they're trying to find ways to cut things, we can all notice that both parties have spoken hardly at all about the war, about what this overseas, all these overseas bases, military bases, this empire is costing us. It's like over 700 military bases in over 130 foreign countries. This to the tune of like $1 trillion a year as we continue to defend our rich allies of, for example, Britain, Western Europe, Japan, and South Korea. Troops stationed over there costing us a lot of money to defend our rich competitors. So as I've said, as the libertarian movement has said for over 30 years, it's a long way past overdue to bring all the troops home from overseas, close all those bases, or let the military of the countries, that country's military, let them staff the bases. It's time to bring all our troops home, save us the money and the expense, plus the aggravation of other countries who don't want us there. Of course, a lot of their governments don't mind because they're paid off through the CIA and the federal government and foreign aid. But constitutionally, we've got no business being in all these countries. And that's what they're upset about, a lot of them. I mean, as Ron Paul has said, or I've said, or even others before even Ron Paul may have mentioned it, is, you know, how would Americans like it if China or Russia had bases, numerous bases in our United States or Canada or Mexico? I don't think we'd like it too much, but miraculously, Uncle Sam on the white horse are those, you know, wonderful Americans. They're allowed to do that. Meanwhile, our economy's still in the toilet. I believe that this year will probably be worse than last year. I don't believe this, you know, getting out of the recession yet. Tell that to the millions who remain unemployed. Government regulation and taxes is sucking so much away from the private sector. And when I say this, I'm not pro-business per se. I'm pro-free enterprise. And I resent the usual smears against libertarianism or Ron Paul Republicans that we want to do with, you know, rules and let business run roughshod over the economy and over individuals. And that's so far from the truth because at the get-go, we're opposed to corporate welfare, to protectionism, to bailouts, to crony capitalism especially. We're opposed to all that. That's not real free enterprise. That's not the free market. That's not capitalism. So to those who say we've never really had a free market in America, well, that's true. You know, we've gotten close. There's never been a pure free market. But we can go in that direction. And again, it's accompanied by personal responsibility, social tolerance, no barriers to market entry, and a true capitalist system where entrepreneurs and businessmen, they bear the risks and they bear the profits and losses. So, and they're not supposed to be bailed out by anybody else. So a lot of the leftist criticism or maybe the socialists criticism and whatnot is partially correct if they're talking about crony capitalism and the perversion of capitalism by special interest groups and protectionism and manipulating the system to suit the politically connected. And they're on the, you know, the government gravy train, which is, you know, a lot of tax funding for their businesses. Yeah, sure, there are a lot of private businesses, but they've got government contracts. So they're all sucking on the you know, the government tit of the federal government. That's what we have to get rid of. We don't need all this, all these layers of government. So when our enlightened rulers are back on the 5th, that would be Wednesday, and they're squawking and talking about cutting spending, Well, I've got the solutions right now. Solutions, ideas, ways to fix things right now. I would, if I was in charge, I would end the drug war immediately. I would pardon all non-violent drug users and end the drug war. Or I would pardon all future nonviolent drug defendants. And we would have a lot less people in prison. And that's one thing that would not cost us so much, building prisons, thanks to Reagan, who was Reagan all about small government. Government is the problem, not the solution. Therefore, he embarks on a huge, massive uptick in the drug war, central planning, very socialistic, and causing the incarceration of thousands of nonviolent drug users, so-called drug offenders. Meanwhile, we don't treat alcoholics this way. So that's one big chunk that we could save, including the federal prisons. Prison is for violent criminals, incorrigible criminals, you know, murderers, rapists, armed robbery, kidnapping, that sort of thing. But there's too many people who don't belong there, and it's a bad environment to learn bad things from. So that's one issue, this drug war. They're addicted to the drug war. The politicians, bureaucrats, the cops, they're addicted to the drug war. Getting a loan of this probably $400 billion, $500 billion failure of the drug war would be a great thing to do. Just throwing more money down a government rat hole. And people who are afraid of re-legalizing drugs or ending the drug war, they haven't done their homework. They haven't studied the origins of America's drug laws, the racism behind it, the discrimination behind it. And the powers that be behind it, the power struggle behind it. You had the former head of Prohibition, Harry Anslinger. He was out of a job in 1933 when they ended Prohibition. So he went on an anti-marijuana campaign, and he, you know, ratcheted up the drug hysteria. And thanks to his efforts, in 1937, they passed the Harrison Act, where marijuana was suddenly illegal. It was legal, and then they passed a law, and suddenly it was illegal because Congress, in its endless brilliance, chose to do that. They ended the failure of Prohibition, and they started the new failure of the drug war. So that's a huge chunk to get rid of. A huge chunk of money saved, and a huge chunk of spending gone, and it should be gone forever. And I had already mentioned the military, the pro-military side. I'm not anti-military. I'm more for efficiency. They always try to say you want to cut off our troops. You don't care about our troops. It's not about the troops. They're not paid enough to begin with. I'd pay them a lot more for what they do, and I wouldn't put them in harm's way, and I wouldn't lie to them. And I'm not going to back down. I never back down from veterans or any military people in these debates and discussions, because I won't let them get away with trying to conflate not supporting the troops with patriotism or foreign policy. Those are two different issues. So, yes, I thank our troops for their service and their bravery, but foreign policy is a different issue. And if our troops really knew foreign policy and all the ramifications of it, they would question why they're serving a lot more, because they're really, in my view, they're not defending my rights or our rights. They're defending a globalist empire. Make that a unconstitutional globalist empire. Yet our politicians and the military, they're sworn to uphold and defend the United States Constitution, but they don't. It's just words. They say they're sworn to it, but in reality they're not, because only Congress can declare war, unlike Korea and Vietnam, those police actions. Why don't they just send the police to do it instead of the GIs? So that's a big thing, cutting back this military budget, not building weapons or anti-missile systems in Western Europe. That isn't necessary. The Cold War is over. Russia's pretty much been defanged. They don't need to be antagonized. I don't think the U.S. would appreciate a missile defense system on its neighboring countries either. So that's just a way to, you know, cause more trouble, more diplomatic disputes, and, of course, to further the aims of the military-industrial complex, which is just – addicted to more spending and continuous growth. So you have the CIA and the military mixed in together. And our troops, poor guys, they're almost the stooges for these power-hungry bureaucrats and people of the military-industrial complex and their I don't want to say conspirators, but they're co-conspirators in Congress, taking all this money away from the private sector who needs that valuable capital and resources for investment, creating more jobs. What, are we going to have an economy, just a total war economy? We're just building tanks and bombs? Is that how we're going to employ people? So the military budget needs drastic cutting. I mean, I would cut it in half right away. I'd bring all, like I said, bring all the troops home. I'd defend our borders, have a strong defense for our country, and not intervene or cause mischief in other countries taking part in civil wars, so we can just get the defense budget passed, bigger budgets. I mean, Obama's signed the biggest one ever recently. You know, Mr. I'm going to end the war. So there's two big things right there, the military budget and ending the drug war. And speaking of war, America's been at war, these other wars, for years. The drug war, the war on poverty, the war on crime, the war on AIDS, the war on tobacco, the war on cancer. All of our taxes thrown down a government rat hole. Please tell me, anyone, which one of those wars we've won. Have we won the war on drugs or cancer or tobacco or crime or poverty or AIDS? I don't think so. It reminds me of cancer research. The money is spent always searching for the cure. Searching. They never find it, but we're searching. Continuous money. Searching, searching, searching. Continuous taxes thrown down a government rat hole in the unwinnable wars on cancer, AIDS, drugs, poverty, crime, all those things that the federal government thinks that it is entitled to do. And it fails at those as it fails at most things, except it's good at prosecuting wars. They like to do that. They like to meddle. They like to tweak things. They like to micromanage. Well, they're not even doing that very well. So what else would PK change? Well, as I've spoken about in previous shows, you know, every state already has a Department of Education, a Department of Agriculture, Department of Transportation, Department of Environmental, you know, Department of Environmental Agencies and whatnot. Those the states already have. So why do we need the federal ones? I would abolish the federal ones. And all these bureaucrats that I would put out of work, I would give them their salary, their full salary and benefits for 1 year. And then their benefits are portable. But those agencies are completely gone. Now, a lot of those clerical workers in Washington, D.C., they could eventually work for private sector companies who would buy those former government useless bureaucracies. Those could be auctioned off and sold to private sector companies who want to produce something that people want and we could export instead of all this war, this constant war, 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 war. And I'm not a pacifist per se. I'm very pro-gun, but the military industrial congressional complex is just – it's probably about 80% beyond what it should be, and it just continues to grow and feeds on itself. All wrapped up in patriotism, of course. Well, as I've said before, which makes me even more valiant and Teflon-like, is that I can't be intimidated by trying to say I'm unpatriotic, these sort of things. Why do you hate America? That nonsense. That's a great Sean Hannity line. Why do you hate America? Why do you hate America? These people don't hate America. They might hate the federal government and what it's done throughout the country and the world, to clarify more clearly. So that's what I would do for a lot of these federal agencies. I would shut them down and sell them off, auction them off to the private sector. We're paying twice for the same nonsense that we're paying at the state level. And all this talk about roads and highways and bridges, this infrastructure that we need repaired, worked on, those types of jobs. Well, sure, that creates work, but not for everyone. I mean, what, a factory worker is going to work on the, you know, the highways? What about the workers who already work on the roads? So as I've mentioned before in my secession solution and my take on things, every state should pay for its own public works. So we don't need these earmarks. I mean, if earmarks are something that goes back to the states for money they've already paid into, then all the more reason we don't need Washington, which is just a useless, expensive middleman, basically what it is, doing 95% or 96% beyond what it should be doing. So every state would pay for its own public works, and this way you'd have less lobbyists in Washington, D.C., and all this on the government tit. States should manage their own funds, take care of their own roads and highways. And in a system of micro-taxes and micro-regulations, all the major roads would be toll roads, and they could charge congestion pricing during rush hour or whatnot. They could charge higher prices. And since people will pay a lot less in taxes in the system I advocate, they would have plenty of extra money to just pay – slightly higher price for things, or, you know, what the market gives us instead of this government distortion of the market process and intervening where the private sector could handle things. Again, like Harry Brown said, the government breaks your leg or legs, then it gives you a crutch or crutches and says, see, if I wasn't here, what would you do? Sort of like just the opposite. So that's a big thing there, cutting back on these federal funding for state highways and all this kind of nonsense. That should be taken care of by the states. A lot of the states are now on the verge of bankruptcy, like Illinois and California. I mean, they can't manage money. You know, they spend, and you know, they realize that they can't always keep raising taxes, but yet they create this mess, and they're trying to be all things to all people. Well, not here. They tell it like it is. So that is something that could be cut right away out of the federal budget. Of course, we'd get rid of the National Department of Transportation, because every state would have its own transportation. They can work together, 50 different states, territories, for example, working together, sharing information, and coming up with better ideas or technologies through their private sectors to address. You know, for example, while we're on the infrastructure, roads, highways, bridges, those sort of things. So that right there is a big chunk taken away from the federal government, which it doesn't need. And bringing the troops home, that's a huge chunk. Ending the wars, declaring victory and leaving. In terms of Afghanistan, they've never had a powerful central government. It's a very tribal country. We may lament the way the women have to dress or how they're treated, but it's not worth getting American lives destroyed over there, as happened to Britain in the mid-19th century and Russia during the 80s. They got the message. They understand. Uncle Sam thinks he's going to plow through. And it doesn't matter who's in power, because Republican or Democrat, Bush and Obama are two heads of the same government party. Two different heads of the same government party. The foreign policy stays the same. The bankruptcy of the country continues. Spending, what, $2 billion a week in Afghanistan. Nation building, meanwhile, our infrastructure is in desperate need. And it's funny to hear both sides talk in Congress or the talking heads when they have their liberal opponents on or whatnot, because they're all pretty much for the same foreign policy. They just tweak it. They nibble on the edges. But it stays pretty much the same. And again, as Obama just signed the biggest military budget ever, I think he even okayed a few extra billion here or there to it. So that's continuing to grow, and it's really hurting us, because it's sucking valuable investment capital out of our country, out of our private sector, and it continues to upset people on the other side of the world who don't like us in their countries, our military and political intervention. And who could blame them? Once you step outside and look at the way things are, and you look at America from another point of view outside, you'll see that these people are right about the military intervention, which leads to more terrorism, which leads to more corporate welfare. And America, again, people should be pissed off that we're subsidizing our rich allies. It's ridiculous. It's going on since the end of World War II. So these are some major things I would do to cut spending. The drug war is one I mentioned. Again, drug war, the military, prisons. Getting rid of the drug war would empty our prisons of a lot of nonviolent people who should not be there. We wouldn't have all this additional prison construction and prison guards lobbying for stricter laws. You know, supposedly they spend more on a prison inmate per year than they do, students in grade school and high school. So not that I want government funding for that, but look at the disparity. Cost prisoners so much more to house. And they become schools for other prisoners, learning how to do other criminal things. So I can't even watch those prison shows Locked Up. I don't care to watch it. And I'm shocked how much supposedly – I guess even for the nonviolent prisoners, how little of yard time they get. I couldn't believe they're in their cells like 24 hours a day. That's ridiculous to me. It would seem like they would have a lot more yard time. And if they behave themselves, they're in a yard where they don't have to worry about it. And those that don't behave can either, I guess, stay in their regular cells or have another area where they can just beat themselves, each other senseless, as far as I care. But something I noticed, gosh, that seems ridiculous. I know there's supposed to be no cruel and unusual punishment, but that seems rather unusual to be locked in a cell all day. I thought they were often locked out in the yard for bigger parts of the day. So anyway, those are a few major things that would make a difference right away. I would immediately – well, I wouldn't exactly immediately cut off foreign aid, but I'd give them like a 6 months or a year deadline – letting the nations of the world, other nations of the world, know that we're going to cut off all foreign aid. Not that we don't want to help other people, but it shouldn't be government to government foreign aid, not from this government, tax supported foreign aid. And they loot that money from us in the first place. There's no constitutional authority to take our money and give it to foreign countries, dictators of other countries, shady leaders. This money doesn't often even hit the people who really need it. It goes to their leaders or dictators' Swiss bank accounts. It props up inefficient industries. So it just distorts things. And it harms farmers in other countries too, because if others are giving food away, it depresses their own agriculture prices. So it has other things that it messes up. And I would – first country I would cut off everything to is Israel. I would cut off all foreign tax funding to Israel. They're not our 51st state, and nowhere in the Constitution are we supposed to, or is the American taxpayer supposed to endlessly support Israel, and also their neighbors. I wouldn't give any more money to Egypt or, you know, any of these other countries, which now they're paid to play nice with Israel. That's ridiculous. No more foreign aid. It just props up dictatorships, inefficient industries, and it loots the American taxpayer, and it's not constitutional. And people think, well, we help other people. America's generosity. Well, Americans, for example, in 1992, Americans gave away over $100 billion. So the generous people of this country can do just fine helping people from outside this country or people who are needy here. They don't need the government's gun pointed at their wallet, forcing them into compulsory compassion. It's the right thing to help other people in need, but it's not the right thing to loot that money from other people, especially people who may not want to go along with somebody's cause, this cause, or may not want to help this group of people that they don't like, or may have harmed their loved ones or relatives, or have a history that they don't want to support. So I don't want to support any foreign aid. And speaking of Israel, hopefully next Monday, if all goes right, I will have the someone I become a fan of his writing. I came across on Rents. .com. I came across Reverend Ted Pike. Reverend Ted Pike. So, tentatively, he will be on Third Stream View next Monday, and we're going to have a free-for-all, hard-hitting, gloves-off discussion about Israel, Zionism, Jewish power, Zionist power, and all its tentacles and what it's doing and how it has a lock on this country. The influence, the infiltration of the military and the government by powerful Zionists, many with dual citizenship, and what role Israel has in also further bankrupting our country with more wars. So we'll get into a heavy critique of Israel. I'm I make no bones about it. I'm a very harsh critic of Israel. and which to me is an apartheid terrorist state. They are very good at impersonating Arabs. Their Mossad has infiltrated our country, our government, our military. They're, you know, and Mossad, of course, works together with Britain's MI6 and the great U.S. CIA, also known as the Cocaine Importation Agency, among other drugs. So they work together, and they're the masters of deception, which is one reason they're very down on Julian Assange. So I'm still a fan of his, although I've heard maybe he's a mole for somebody else. But I think in that case, he should expose right away Israel, China, Russia, get it all out in the open so citizens of the world can see what their governments are up to and how they've been staging and manipulating things from behind that statist globalist curtain of theirs, how they've been doing it for years, if not centuries, which is a reason that they don't like the internet, because it's sort of put a damper on things. They can't get away with as much without alternative discussions and information contrary to what the globalists are telling us. Now, who are the globalists? They're, well, the Obamas, the Bill Clintons, the Bushes, the Al Gores. They are the power elite who they're the ones behind the scenes, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, the Morgans, and of course the other globalists, and that whole crowd, Newt Gingrich. I mean, even to me, Hannity, that crowd, they're part of it too. They say they're not. They oppose world government, but I don't believe them. They just seem like fronts to me. They're highly paid. These politicians, you know, and presidents, they all retire as millionaires with their, you know, bodyguards. Meanwhile, you know, the people are getting the crumbs. And I don't say this as some feudal socialist, because I reject socialism and collectivism, all stripes of it. And I especially reject today's – you keep hearing this word progressive. I've mentioned progressives in the past. I'm opposed to the progressive ideology, which is just a bigger government, more government control. And as far as progressives, as I've mentioned before, we already had a progressive era with Teddy Roosevelt and Wilson. And what did we get? We got the federal income tax, the Federal Reserve System, World War I, and Prohibition. So to progressives, I say no thank you. And, you know, the real source of progressives is regressive, because they continue to push their outmoded belief that society, you know, advances only if it is consciously designed by well-meaning and smart intellectuals and steered by a beneficent and powerful government. So we need the vision of the anointed, the Obamas, the George Bushes, the Brzezinskis, this whole crowd. We need their ideas. When it's enlightened or consecrated by these federal rulers and leaders we have. So, you know, I reject progressives. They are the it's their vision. They're the anointed ones. And it's I know that conservatives and talk radio refers to Obama as the anointed one, but their crowd is the anointed ones too, for their aims. The military industrial complex and this the police state, the national security state, they're really gung ho in all this crap, because it hasn't come back to bite them yet or their loved ones. And progressives, another thing that I find annoying about them is that, you know, they always believe, you know, it's a larger role for the state. You know, that's the hallmark of progressive thinking about what government can do. So, you know, of course, they want a large government to implement their ideas. And then, you know, anyone objecting to the these ideas of the progressives, they're, you know, therefore you're a non-progressive, and, you know, you're held in, you know, contempt as someone who is, you know, content to allow their past habits and their notions and desires to interfere with, you know, big and bold ideas pushed on us by the progressives, their collective mentality. It's just, to me, it's just another type of socialism, actually, more central planning. And, you know, they're the elite crowd that's going to, you know, point the way. I mean, people who punch a clock in the blue collar crowd, they're not part of this per se. They're influenced by it, by some of the leaders of this crowd, and when they infiltrate unions and this, that. But by and large, they want us to comply with their scheme, their globalist scheme on their leftist agenda. But the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers don't matter. It's just chicken feed to them. They can let the progressives and the conservatives bicker back and forth about what they want as long as the elite control the banking system. I believe that Meyer Rothschild said back in, I think, the 17th century about he didn't care or show me who controls the banks of any country, and I don't care who makes its laws. So I see that around us. The nomenclature stays intact. The Zionist banking crowd and their cronies, you know, the growing police state, the cops, this massive security apparatus. Another thing, getting back to spending cuts. So the Republicans fail so miserably on 9/11, they can't even defend their own headquarters, the Pentagon. So nobody gets fired. And what happens? The Republicans reward themselves with a huge raise. They give themselves a $40 billion bureaucracy. Now, we've already spent $40 billion a year security, intelligence, information, this sort of thing. So $40 billion a year already spent on this. Now they give themselves, the Republicans who are for smaller government, they give themselves a $40 billion, very intrusive Department of Homeland Security, that pathetic bureaucracy. So, and all it's done is hold us up at airports more and cause us a lot more grief. I laugh at those who say Bush kept us safe. Bush didn't keep us safe. That's what the military does and the intelligence community. They're keeping us safe. Bush didn't keep us safe. Was he out there with a gun walking around defending our borders or killing those evil Muslims in Iraq and Afghanistan? No. These are things that cross my mind that we could do to implement to cut spending a lot. And this is only going to hurt politicians and bureaucrats. It's not going to hurt private sector people as much. And then with the savings that come from the end of these bureaucracies would loosen up billions for the economy. Another one I get rid of is the Department of Energy. I think Carter gave us that. It produces no energy and it, you know, gives subsidies and it subsidizes their politically connected, energy producers. So Department of Energy, I would get rid of that too. It's not important. We had plenty of energy before that. It's sucking up billions of dollars in our economy. And when I say abolish a lot of these bureaucracies and whatnot, I don't want that money to stay with the government for its future use. That money should go back and stay in the citizens' pockets. You know, meanwhile, states got to shape up their responsibilities and get their house in order and stop spending so much so they won't turn out like California and Illinois. Two fine examples of states that can't manage money. Yet individuals and businesses are supposed to be able to manage money and be financially responsible and fiscally responsible, because if they're not, you hear from the heavy hand of government, the IRS and the other regulatory agencies. But yet the federal government gets away with this. You know, do as I say, not as I do. Yet they're taking our money and telling us what to do. So they're very out of control. And as I've said before, the last couple Monday evenings, I've spoken about my secession solution to get us moving in a better direction and cutting the strings to the federal government while we can self-govern, maintain law and order, maintain a defense, protect people's property rights, and re-educate the police where they're civil servants. They're not militaristic, overbearing bastards who've just become so militarized and very taser happy. So to me, that's a big problem. So as I've said, I interweave things together, politics, economics, and they all have a bearing on each other. So it is hard to separate them, which is not something I do, because they interact. Other things to cut. Let me see. NASA, and everybody gets emotional about this. Not everybody, but a lot of people get freaked out about this NASA thing. I would sell most of NASA to the private sector, both foreign and domestic. I would see that the Air Force could handle the strategic part, and then the other part would be sold off to private sector, to private investors, both foreign and domestic, because we should move towards, if they want to have space exploration, which I am not opposed to, I'm just opposed to federal funding of it. They can have their space exploration. They can raise their own funds to do this. So I would give NASA probably about a year, and then I would cut their funding also. Sell off the Tennessee Valley Authority, sell off or auction off a lot of this government stuff and let the private sector. But when I say the private sector, it won't be monopolistic, because there will be no – should be no barriers to other companies or businesses entering the market, not being kept out by the established interests who use safety and security and this and that, workers' rights to exclude competitors. They speak, and their lobbyists speak like they have the concern of the people and the workers in mind. But lo and behold, behind the scenes, they got their own private agenda. But I have no agenda. I'm a Ron Paul Republican. I'm a Libertarian Republican, but I'm heavily critical of other Republicans if I need to be. And they need it because they've brought us down this huge spending path. And Reagan was a big spender too. They talk about cutting taxes. Yeah, they cut taxes and then they spend ridiculous amounts. You know, it's unbelievable that they continue the spending with like they have. And I laugh when I hear them talk about things that they want to cut, this and that. You know, are they going to give themselves, what, a 5% pay cut or a 5% pay in their budgets? Wow. There's so much there now, so much waste. It's just unbelievable. And then they put down Ron Paul, who really wanted to do some serious cutting, you know, because Republicans are like, again, there are a lot of them, some of them are socialist light. They deserve a lot of criticism. Again, we know Democrats are big spenders and they always want to grow government. They're statists and very collectivist. We know that. What's the Republicans' excuse? Spend, spend, spend. You know, it's just ridiculous. And their pet projects, again, are the military and, enlarging the police state or this national security state, which is just spying on us. And, you know, of course, the Islam, Muslims, and terrorism is their new Cold War. And they're like rabid dogs. When I hear Republicans, especially about talking about Muslims or this and that, they're rabid dogs about it. You know, they just seem so naive about the past and other cultures that they make these sweeping statements or accusations. No wonder, Uncle Sam America has been referred to the ugly American, or Uncle Sam as the ugly American. And it stems from this intervening in other countries or thinking we know what's best for the rest of the world or other countries. And that's where that resentment comes from. I've realized this for 30 years now. And I wasn't shocked when I first heard it and was told it, because I put two together and I said, yeah, there is a lot of intervention going on. There is a lot of U.S. browbeating other countries and intimidating them. And, we've wanted this to stop for as long as I can remember. So, again, my main beef is with the federal government, which messes up everything, not only inside our borders, but outside our borders. And, of course, the Federal Reserve continues to create more inflation, to print more, to make the value of money worth less, which has a big negative effect on our people. And it's bad enough when people lose their jobs, but the inflation that's coming down the line will lead to higher prices. And then that tragic cycle, you know, just perpetuates itself. The, you know, what is it? Wages, prices and wages. So, well, you have the money losing its value because of the Fed, then there's going to be wage demands for more money. So it just, it's that endless, you know, dog chasing its tail sort of concept. So I mentioned before I would get rid of the Federal Reserve, as Ron Paul wrote, and the Fed, to do it rather gradually until competitive currencies or other currencies are put into place, put into effect. I don't mind myself if the government wanted to measure or attest, you know, spot checking to the value of gold, attest to its purity. I don't have a problem with that as long as they don't intervene any further in the monetary system. And speaking of the Fed, you know, inflation's a tax. So there's a lot we could do to fix things. And again, everything I advocate, to the best of my knowledge, does not infringe on anybody's liberty or property or peace. It doesn't seek to take away anything from anybody. Yes, there will be many bureaucrats and agencies, bureaucracies, deliberately closed, but not because we hate people in those groups per se. It's because we don't need this huge government apparatus. It's more better served, if at all, on the state level. And if we want to get rid of these agencies on a state level, then we can do that later on. You know, I think we're so overregulated. I think this country is probably 95% overregulated and overtaxed for what we could have as a very efficient country and still be able to take care of our own and the elderly and whatnot. But with the government and so many other – its hands and so many other things, like, you know, Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, all teetering on, you know, bankruptcy or, you know, seriously in the red. You know, when's this going to happen? It's the thing about Austrian economics. We know how and why these bubbles are caused and these recession, depression cycles, the trade cycle as we call it. We know how and why they occur. We have a very good track record knowing and describing how these things happen. We can't tell you when, though, but we can tell you how and why. And, of course, Austrian economics is still resented by certain people who have the economic disciplines in other schools, be it Chicago School or Keynesian School or that idiot, what's his name, Paul Krugman, how he ever got a gig. This guy's an economist. He doesn't seem like one to me. You know, his whole thing, his crowd is they didn't spend enough on the stimulus. Well, the stimulus is part of the main problem too. The spending for that, the huge wars. I think it's going to get a lot worse before it gets a lot better. So I've laid out a lot of spending cut ideas that I think would make a big difference. There's even a lot of federal lands that could be sold or auctioned off. They'd be used for ranching, farming, recreation. You know, the federal government owns a lot of land, so that could be, you know, dealt back to the states because the states made the federal government and the states own whatever those lands are, and things will be just fine. States can take care of themselves, and if they can't, they should go bankrupt and reorganize till they get it together, till they learn how to manage money. Again, if individuals and businesses have to manage money, then why shouldn't the government? You know, but it demands us. That we're supposed to do what they want us to do, demands that from us, and they'll come after us because their only solution is prison or, you know, murder, torture. That's the best government can do when it's outside of its boundaries, which should be very narrowly defined. So I'm not an anarchist. I'm about 95% there. My ideas for, a government are through a constitution that's very strict and very binding. It has a mechanism to reform it or amend it. Would have, you know, to amend it, but otherwise it really sinks its teeth and puts very strict limitations on government power. So it's going to allow more prosperity, more innovation, more technology. These are the things that I address and I would like to see happen. I've had these ideas and solutions for many years. You don't really necessarily always hear solutions. They say conservatives when I listen to talk radio, but I'm uncomfortable with the word conservative. I don't consider myself a conservative. It's not a word I'm comfortable with. It's got a lot of baggage. I prefer classical liberal or libertarian or Ron Paul Republican. I don't mind bluntly saying I'm a Ron Paul Republican, which should let people know, you know, put them on notice that I don't give in, I'm not intimidated, and I'm staying consistent to my message. And, you know, I'll debate you, I'll talk with you about things, but I don't back down from what I know to be true and correct. And in terms of economics in the bubble, Austrian economics has been proven to be correct historically, empirically. So, you know, we're right on the money. We're the paradigm for how things should be, how they could be. And that is the path that I would go down. So I hope our illustrious politicians will figure out a way to cut spending. I don't really see it until they really address the military issue. And that's something that needs immediate rectifying, because it's just taken us further down that government rat hole. And meanwhile, so many people are out of work here. There's a lot of despair, sorrow, people losing their homes. And all this, most of it can be traced back to the federal government. People blame the bankers, but the bankers are tied into the federal government and the Fed. And, you know, together they set interest rates that are not connected to the market forces or the gold standard. And it leads to our further poverty or, you know, lower standards of living. I believe that this generation or the younger generation today is going to be probably the first one in years, decades, that didn't do better than their parents' generation. So there's a lot that needs to be done lying ahead. I don't envy a lot of our young people who have inherited this debt. But, you know, I'm one of those who didn't vote for that sort of thing or push for it or lobby for it. So those chickens have come home to roost. And I think a lot of these jobs in America might not be coming back. Hopefully something else will take their place, but it has to flourish in an atmosphere of, you know, micro taxes and micro regulations. Otherwise, it remains just an overregulated economy. Less opportunity for other people. Well, I hear my theme music coming, folks. As always, it was fun to chat about what needs to be done, my solutions for it all. I'll be back again next Monday, hopefully with Reverend Pike. We're going to talk about Zionism and Israel. I'm here every Monday evening at 9 o'clock Pacific, 12 midnight Eastern, and 11 p.m. Central. I'd like to thank all my listeners for tuning in. Bid you all a good evening and a happy new year. Thanks for your help, Don. Talk to everybody next week. Won't you take this message to my sisters and my brothers? You will find them most everywhere.